This is Brian Tracy. We're going to learn a lot today. This is a subject that is very near and dear to my heart. Many years ago, as you know, I started off with nothing. I did not graduate from high school. I worked at laboring jobs for many years. I finally got into sales when I couldn't get a laboring job and struggled for many, many months until I finally asked one of the top people what he was doing differently from me, and he told me, and I did it, and my sales went up. When I got into sales management, I did the same thing. Then I began to listen to the audio programs, read the books, attend the seminars, and when I got into business, I did the same thing. And I've now been in 22 different businesses, and every single one, what I did is I stopped and I said, all right, how does it work in this business? And what I found is that the law of cause and effect is the law of human destiny. There is a reason for everything that happens, that success in business is not an accident. Failure is not an accident. And so therefore, if you want to be successful at anything, what you do is you find out what the other successful people are doing. You do it over and over again until you get the same result. Now, this seminar is going to be the most powerful single one-hour explanation of how to become wealthy as an entrepreneur ever recorded. There are more than 8 million millionaires in the United States today, according to the Wall Street Journal. Most of them are self-made. They started with nothing and earned all their money within one generation. I used to feel sorry for myself because I didn't have any money. And it's absolutely astonishing how many people say, well, I could change my life, but I don't have any money. Do you know that the average business startup in America costs between $10,000 and $14,000? And most of it is funded by loans from family and friends and credit card extensions. So people say, well, I don't know how to start a business. No, you don't know how to start General Motors, but anybody can start a little business. There's 1,000 businesses, according to the bookstores, that you can start for less than $100, which gets your feet wet, which gets you experience, which gets you to the first rung on the ladder. The 10 wealthiest multi-billionaires in the U.S. all started with nothing and earned their money in a single lifetime. Just think, who's the richest man in America? Bill Gates, started with nothing. University dropout. Second richest man, Warren Buffett, started with nothing. Third richest man, Paul Allen, or Michael Dell, or Larry Ellison. One of those people all started with nothing. The next five richest people are the descendants, the children, and the wife of Sam Walton, who started with nothing. So when people say, well, I don't have anything to start with, don't ever let that hold you back. Anybody can find enough to get started. Fully 80% of self-made millionaires in America are entrepreneurs or salespeople. So starting and building your own business is and always has been the high road to wealth in the United States. That's the high road. Now, there may be other ways, but 4 out of 5 of your chances of making it financially will come from starting and building a successful business. And by the way, there's 25 million businesses in the U.S. and 2 million new ones every year. So there's an awful lot of very average people with average backgrounds and average educations who are starting businesses. In fact, there's nothing that will make you madder than to see somebody who's dumber than you making more money than you. And almost invariably, it's somebody who is either running their own business or selling something, and they're simply doing things the right way, which we'll talk about. Now, the good news is that the United States today is the most entrepreneurial country in the world, according to the OECD in Paris. Fully 70% of Americans dream about starting their own businesses someday. It's the largest single demographic in the entire country is the number of people who want to be in their own business. And you know what the number one reason for being in your own business is? It's not to make a lot of money, although that is a wonderful idea. It's simply to be free. Freedom is the number one motivation for entrepreneurship. Freedom and having complete control of your life. Being able to do whatever you want with your life and, of course, achieve financial independence if you do it right. 1/12 of Americans working today are working in a business startup. It's the highest of any country in the world. Now, here's some good news. Entrepreneurship is natural and normal for most people. This means that you have within you right now the talents and abilities that you need to start and build a successful business, to take complete control over your life and to achieve financial freedom. You just need to learn how, just like I needed to learn how when I started off in selling. The great tragedy is that most people in business start off and work by the seat of their pants. They have no idea what they're doing and they make it up as they go along until they run out of money. Then they go back and work for wages and they say the economy is no good. In fact, if you can drive a car, according to the experts, you can learn to be a successful entrepreneur. Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Records and Virgin Airlines and a billionaire entrepreneur, said this. He said, once you learn how to start and build a business, you can do it over and over again. The principles are the same. This is why you see some people start a business and lose everything, and other people just start one business after another, and every one of them is successful. They become what are called serial entrepreneurs because they learn the critical practices, and then they just apply them over and over again. Here's the good news. All business skills are learnable. You can learn any business skill you need to achieve any business or financial goal you can set for yourself. Now, you may not be able to learn to play concert piano or to dump baskets. You may not be able to learn a special skill that requires an incredible talent, but anybody can learn to be an entrepreneur. People all over the world in the most backward third world countries can become entrepreneurs. It is a learnable skill. And once you learn the skill, you can use it over and over again. And each time you use the skill, you get better and better at it. And as you get better at it, you achieve the same financial goals with less time, less effort, and less energy. And that's the reason for success. People learn how to do it over and over again, get better and better, achieve the goals faster and faster. And that's why you see when a company gets in trouble, they bring in a specialist. The specialist will take a company that's losing money, and in 90 days, they'll turn the company around. Do more of this, less of this, start, stop, get into things. And you can learn these skills as well. I say if you can use a modern cell phone without looking at the guide that comes with it, you can learn any business skill. Now, to succeed in your own business, this is the key. You need a range of skills. Just like if you want to be healthy and physically fit, you have to do a range of exercises for your whole body. Well, you need a range of skills in business. The absence of one key skill can hold you back or even be fatal to your dreams of business success. It's absolutely amazing. The absence of a single skill, the ability to close a sale, the ability to understand financial reports, the ability to set the proper prices, the ability to hire the right people. The absence of a single skill can be fatal. You know, that's why fully 80% of new businesses go broke within the first 4 years. 86% of current businesses are underperforming. Now, here's a question. What is the purpose of a business? The purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer in a cost-effective way. Profits are not the purpose of a business. Profits are the result of skillful, successful customer acquisition and customer service. Profits are what you get if you do the business properly. In reality, an expert was telling me recently, he said, business is really quite simple. It consists of three basic activities. First, you must find or create a product or service that people want, need, and are willing to pay for. It's absolutely amazing how many people go to the market with a product or service that nobody wants. Second, you must market and sell the product or service in sufficient quantities to cover all your costs and make a profit. It's amazing how many people have good products and services and good companies and everything else, but they don't or they can't sell enough of the product. What's even worse is when they see their competitors who sell lower quality products at the same or higher prices running circles around them. I tell you, I've had this situation before. It drives you crazy. Now, the third thing you need to run a business, first find a product, second sell. Third is you must manage and administer the people, money, and business activities necessary to run the business. A good exercise is if you're in business, give yourself a grade on a scale of 1 to 10 in each of these three areas. Do you have a great product or service that's in high demand that you can sell at a good price? Are you selling and marketing it vigorously? Are you keeping accurate track of all of your bookkeeping and expenses? Wherever you're the weakest, that will be the source of all your problems. If you're currently operating your own business, by the way, I want you to go to the Brian Tracy University website at www.briantracyu.com and download the free business assessment. It has 25 questions and scales that will help you to analyze your business completely in less than 10 minutes. And by the way, this assessment is completely free, no strings attached, just go and get it. It can change your business life. Remember, accurate diagnosis is half the cure. You can't solve a problem if you don't know what it is. And this free business assessment will enable you to analyze, like doing a complete medical checkup on a body, do a complete business checkup on your business. And it's free, so give it a shot. Now, there are three qualities of successful entrepreneurs based on studies of many thousands of entrepreneurs. First, they have the courage to launch. to step out in faith with no guarantees of success. This is based on a study at Babson College, who studied and followed the graduates of their entrepreneurial MBA for 13 years. They found the ones that started the business were no different in any other way than they had the courage to launch with no guarantees. The number one reason for failure in life, by the way, is people want to do things all their lives, but they never have the courage to take a chance because they're afraid that they might not succeed the first time. And I've got news for you. Nobody succeeds at anything the first time. So therefore, don't be afraid of succeeding. Successful entrepreneurs are willing to face the prospect of temporary failure in the pursuit of opportunity, freedom, control, and financial independence. Now, the second quality of successful entrepreneurs is the quality of optimism. They have a positive mental attitude toward themselves and their business opportunities. This gives them the self-confidence to keep moving forward in the face of adversity. And then logically, the third quality of entrepreneurs is that they are persistent. They never give up. As far as entrepreneurs are concerned, failure is not an option. Well, if you're not now in business, how do you determine what business to get into? And by the way, even if you're in business, your business is going to change dramatically in the next few years, and you're going to have to introduce new products, new services for new customers and new markets. So these points are really relevant for you. Jim Collins, in his book, Good to Great, which has sold millions of copies, analyzes more than 1,000 companies to determine what makes a business go from good to great. He finds that the ideal business is one that has three qualities. First, it is something that you have a passion for. Now, this is really important. It's something that you really care about. It's a product or service that you love. I knew a guy once who just loved music. He had a wonderful ability to play different musical instruments. He liked to sing. He liked to write songs. He could play a piano or a saxophone. He could play a guitar. So what he did is he went into the sales of musical instruments. Eventually, he bought out the store and owned the store and built a very successful multi-million dollar business. And when people came in and they were looking for information on instruments or musical lessons, he could talk to them. He was so excited about it. He got them excited as well. So, first of all, you have to have something you have a passion for. It has to be a product or service that you really like and enjoy and that you want other people to experience as well. If you don't love your product and love the people you sell your product to, it's just the wrong combination for you. Now, second, according to Jim Collins, a successful business is something in which you have the potential to be the best in your area. Now, you may not be the best when you start or at the moment, but you have the potential to be the best. You have the potential to become excellent. And I'll talk about this a little bit later. The third quality of a successful business is that you are offering a product or service that is highly profitable. If you do become the best in your field, doing something you really care about, you're going to make a lot of money as a result. And it's absolutely amazing how many people fall down on one of these three. Now, where these three, they call them the three circles, where these three circles overlap, passion, potential for excellence, and high levels of profitability, that's called the sweet spot in entrepreneurial activity. That's where you start your business. That's where you build your business. And by the way, if you have your own business, you'll find that there are certain products and services and certain types of customers that you really, really like. And if ever you're thinking of cutting back and focusing, you focus on those products and services that you really like, selling to those customers that you really care about, which will turn out in almost every case to be your most profitable. Now, the way you find a product or service is, first, find something that you really like, believe in, care about, and want other people to use and enjoy, as I said. You have to be excited about your product or service if you want your customers to become excited about it. Second, once you have an idea for a product or service, go to a potential customer for your product or service idea and ask him or her if he would buy it and how much he would pay for it, or she for that matter. This is called fast, cheap market research. The only true test is a customer test. When you ask a customer for their opinion, they will always tell you the truth. This can make or save you a fortune in the course of your business career. I've had an enormous number of people come up to me and ask me about business ideas, and I say the first question is, would you use it yourself? Interesting, by the way, Avon Cosmetics, one of the biggest companies in the world, recently the president called together some of the senior people and said that they were going to go upmarket. They were going to bring out a much more expensive line, better, higher quality line of cosmetics. And their top representatives, top distributors, argued, said, no, we can't do that. We're known in the market for this. So she asked them this cold question. She said, how many of you use our products? There's dead silence in the room. These were all very successful women, and most of them didn't even use the Avon products they were selling because they were down market. So she said, the point is made, and they all realized they had to go up market. Now, three questions you ask before you introduce a new product or service or start a business are these. First, and I do this with clients, I say, here's the three questions. I say, first, is there a market for your product or service? And they'll say, oh, yeah, there's a market. There's people that want my product or service. So I'll say, oh, okay, good. Now, is it something that is better, faster, or cheaper, or all three than anything else available? Never assume. Always test your assumptions before you invest. Many people assume there's a market, and when they go out and ask people, they find there isn't one. By the way, biggest mistake made in the .com, .bomb area is they developed their products in closed rooms. This is what they say in Silicon Valley. They developed the products within four walls. They never spoke to a customer. When they went public, even with massive valuations, very few of them had a product that anybody wanted or would pay for. So, never assume that there's a market that people will buy. Second of all, once you've decided that, yes, there is a market, people want and need and will buy and pay for my product or service at this price, okay? The second question, is your market large enough? Now, this is very important. Are there enough people to buy enough of what you sell to make it a prosperous business? Very simple. Someone says, I'm going to open a store or a restaurant in a small town or a distant place. Well, of course, yes, there is a market, but is the market big enough? Some people think they've got a great idea for a product or service, and there is a market, there will be people who will buy it, but there aren't enough people to make it a profitable, ongoing business. Now, the third question that you ask is the market concentrated enough? Is it possible for you to reach your market with conventional advertising or promotional materials? Now, this is really important. In the age of the internet, by the way, you have a bit of an edge. In the age of mailing lists, you have an edge. But what if your market is one person per town? Well, there's 13,000 towns in the United States. If you have one person per town, can you afford to advertise to reach that market? And what people sometimes find is, yes, there is a market. Yes, the market is large enough, but the market is so dispersed that I could never get to enough customers to make this a business. And at that point, they fold their cards. The key question in marketing is this. What exactly is to be sold? And to whom is it to be sold? And how is it to be sold? And at what price? And how is it to be billed, produced, distributed, and serviced? And if you like, how is it to be warrantied or guaranteed or taken back or repaired? This is the key question. What exactly is to be sold, and to whom it is to be sold, and how is it to be sold, and at what price, and how are you going to bill it, produce it, distribute it, service it, repair it, maintain it, and guarantee it? The failure to answer any one of these questions accurately in this single paragraph is fatal to a business. It's enough to cause a business to fail. If you can't answer two or three of these questions, then it's only a matter of time before you're back working for wages. And that's why we take our clients and we walk them through this process and help them, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. Now, you can ask and answer this question over and over again throughout your business career. And whenever you're having problems with sales or marketing or profits or anything else, stop, ask the question, and ask yourself, could we be wrong in our answers to one or more of these questions? Now, there are only three ways that you can increase sales in your business. First, you can make more individual sales. Second, you can make larger sales per customer as a result of cross-selling, upselling, add-ons, and even bundling. And third, you can make more frequent sales to the same customer. You can get the same customer to come back and buy from you over and over again. You have to be continually thinking of ways to do all three. Make more sales, make larger sales, and make sales more often to your customers if it's at all possible. I worked with a restaurant chain not long ago, and the restaurant chain did an analysis, and they're spending a lot of money advertising and promoting. They did an analysis, and they found that their average customer visited the restaurant once every 2 months. So I said, rather than advertising for more new customers, why don't you structure your pricings, your offerings, your special, what they call frequent guest offerings, and special phone numbers, and so on, to change those so that people come more often? And they did. They had a special telephone number for people who had come in and filled out a comment card. If they called this number at any time, they always got a reservation, even though this was a very popular restaurant. they had a special service. They put these people in booths and in the best tables when they came in. They gave them special cocktails. Occasionally, they gave them a bottle of wine as a gift when they'd been there three or four times. And what they did is they took their average customer visit from 2 months to 1 month. They doubled the size of their market. They went public for $600 million and made multimillionaires out of all the owners by the simple strategy of finding a way to get their customers to come back twice as often as they were before. How could you do this with your customers? Well, the primary job of the entrepreneur, which determines your success, is to innovate and market. Everything else can be outsourced and delegated, but your job is to innovate and market. Innovation means finding faster, better, cheaper, easier ways to serve your customers. Marketing is to find better, faster, cheaper, and more efficient ways to sell your service or your product to your customers. Innovation and marketing go on throughout your business life. Now, there's only one primary job, goal, and measure of business success, and it is customer satisfaction. This is the only way that you can tell if you are going to survive and thrive in business is customer satisfaction. The entire purpose of your business and your success will be determined by how well you satisfy your customers in comparison with other people who also want to satisfy your same customers. Remember, people always go where they're treated the best. People always go to where they get the best service. And the most amazing thing is you can go to McDonald's and get quick, happy service and eat lunch or dinner for $5. You can go to a nice restaurant and pay $100 and get the same amount of food. The other $95, you pay for the service. You pay for the way they treat you and the way they seat you and the way they address you and the way they bring you the food. You pay the big bucks for the service, not for the satiation of the appetite. And many people say, oh, geez, you know, can't afford it and so on and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that people, if you really give them great service, find that they will pay enormous amounts more than your competitors. Well, the key measure of customer satisfaction, if you can tell how you're doing, is repeat business. It's just repeat business. How often do your customers come back and buy again? This means that your customers come back and buy again and again. The ultimate question for customer satisfaction has just been discovered in some great research by Bain & Company. After going through thousands of customer evaluations and tests and slicing and dicing, they come up with what they call the ultimate question. And the ultimate question is this: would you recommend us to others? Would you recommend us to others? This is the summary question, and the answer to it is the summary answer of all customer satisfaction surveys. And if you get less than a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10 in the answer to this question, it means your business is in trouble. So you have to ask your customers, would you recommend us to others? And if not, why not? What would we have to do to satisfy you so well that you would eagerly recommend us to others? Just as you tell your friends eagerly about a good movie you saw, or a good restaurant you went to, or a good book you read, how would you have to treat your customers so that they eagerly tell their friends to come and buy from you with the same kind of enthusiasm? The customer's answer to this question will tell you everything you need to know about the efficiency and effectiveness of your business operations and your products or services. This is a hard question to ask, but if you have the courage to ask it and act on the answers, it can change your life. Now, your goals in building your business are three. They are, number one, to get the customer to buy from you for the first time. This is the major focus of your sales and marketing efforts. Number two, they are to get the customer to buy again because he or she was so satisfied with the first purchase that they want to come back. In reality, and I teach this to my audiences all the time, is the second purchase is the most important because it is proof that you delivered on the promises you made to get the first purchase. You see, you can always get the first purchase with good advertising, discounts, special offers, and everything else, but the second purchase, that's the proof that you delivered. That is the proof that you're going to survive and thrive in business. We say the most important is number three. The third key to building your business is that your customers bring their friends and recommend their friends and refer their friends to buy from you as well. When you go into business, it's simple. You want them to buy from you first, to buy again, and bring their friends. To buy from you, buy again, and bring their friends. Now, the primary purpose of marketing and advertising is to make selling unnecessary. Let me repeat that. It comes from Peter Drucker. The primary purpose of marketing and advertising is to make selling unnecessary. If you have chosen your market accurately and you have advertised effectively, people will automatically say, "That's for me. That's for me. I want that." They will call up or come over or flood your business. Some friends of mine are brilliant advertisers, and they were advertising a cosmetic for the wife of Ernest Borgnine, the actor. And they placed a full-page ad in the Los Angeles newspaper introducing this line of perfumes and fragrances at a store on Rodeo Drive. And they said, "Warning, please do not buy this product if you are concerned about the following. The price is very high. This is not a cheap perfume. The beauty of this perfume justifies a high price. But the great danger is that we cannot guarantee what will happen when men smell this perfume. The effect that it has on men has proven so extraordinary in research, in attracting them to any woman who is wearing it, that we cannot be held liable for what happens to you if you wear this perfume when you are out on a date or in public." Well, can you imagine that? Brilliant car. The place was flooded. They had something like 4,000 women leaving their cars in the middle of the street, fighting to get to the door to buy this perfume. They sold everything they'd made for a one-year sale. They sold out in one afternoon. Because by positioning it that way, they made selling unnecessary. No one had to stand behind the counter and explain it. They just simply ripped it out of their hands. The rule is that good advertising sells. I learned this from an expert many years ago with regard to advertising. He says, if it's good advertising, it sells. If your advertisement is a good advertisement, it will trigger immediate sales. If it does not trigger immediate sales, you must stop that advertising immediately and start advertising in a different way or a different place. Tell you a quick story. We were advertising and we promoted a seminar some years ago, and the advertising was running on the radio at very high cost, and we got a call from the head of a rival advertising agency. And he said, "How's your promotion going?" He said, "I hear your ads on the radio." He said, "Oh yeah, real well." He said, "I have just one question for you." I said, yeah. "Is your telephone ringing?" And that was a showstopper, because the telephone wasn't ringing. He's the only one who had called that day, and the ads had been running all day. He said, "Is your telephone ringing?" And throughout all my business life, I've thought, isn't that great? You can tell if your advertising's good because your telephone rings. If your telephone doesn't ring, don't keep repeating the ad. Pull the ad as fast as you can, because it means that the ad is not working. And keep changing advertising and places of advertising until your telephone rings. Simplest of all measures of whether you're doing it properly. Here are four keys to successful sales and marketing. First is specialization. You must specialize in a particular customer or market area. You must specialize in a particular product or service. It must be clear to you and to everyone who deals with you that this is your area of specialization. Now, if someone were to ask you to write on the back of a business card, "What do you specialize in?" what would you say? I had a good friend who built a billion-dollar business, who started off selling office supplies from door to door. And he called on many different types of businesses, but especially law offices. What he found at a young age, he was 23, his name was Harry, was that law offices have different needs than most general business offices. So he decided he would set up a little business on his own, and he would just sell to law offices. By the time he was finished, he had built the biggest company in the United States selling to law offices. They specialized in providing law offices with every single product or service, every piece of furniture, every bit of technology that a lawyer would ever need to run an effective business. And they built a billion-dollar business, and he retired as one of the richest men in the United States because he specialized in a particular customer. He specialized in a particular type of market. What should you be specializing in? By the way that you can tell, of course, it's someplace where you have a passion, you have the capacity to do well at it, it's highly profitable, but here's the best indicator of all. Your customers tell you that they really like what you do in this area. your customers compliment you more in this area than anything else. That's a good indication of where you should specialize. Now, the second key to successful sales and marketing is differentiation. The title of the book, Differentiate or Die by Jack Trout, is quite true. To be successful in business, you must have a competitive advantage. You must have an area of superiority that makes you different and better than any of your competitors. What is it? Your competitive advantage must be something that your customers want, need, value, and are willing to pay for. Some people say, well, our competitive advantage is we have the happiest people. No, because that doesn't do anything for your customers. It must be something that benefits your customers in some way. This is often called your value offering. It is what makes you the only supplier for the customers you have chosen to serve. Sometimes it's called your area of excellence. Finally, in differentiation, you need a unique selling proposition. This is something that you do or offer that no one else in the world can do or offer for your customers, or at least that they're not doing it now. As Jack Welch of General Electric said, if you don't have competitive advantage, don't compete. Your ability to develop a competitive advantage, a unique selling proposition, is the key to your success in business. If you don't have it, it's only a matter of time. Now, the third key to sales and marketing is segmentation. Now, this is the process where you look at your market and you identify your ideal customers. These are the customers who will most appreciate the product or service in which you specialize and the way in which your product or service is superior to anyone else's. These are the ones who will buy from you the fastest based on those two criteria. It's what you specialize in and what you do well coming together. It's the perfect storm. The fourth key to marketing and sales is concentration. And this requires that you concentrate all of your sales, marketing, business efforts, money, investment, people on contacting and selling exactly those customers who can most benefit and enjoy from what it is that you do better than anyone else. Who are those customers? Remember, 20% of your customers will account for 80% of your sales. They're invariably the people who answer these four criteria. They value your area of specialization. They respect your area of differentiation. They are the right profile to sell to. They're high profit customers. And these are the ones you have to concentrate on. Now, there are seven strategic questions you need to ask in the process of specialization, differentiation, segmentation, and concentration. Here they are. Number one, ask, who is my customer? Who is my ideal customer? Who is my perfect customer? There's a great book out, the title of which is worth the price of admission. It's simply called Attracting Perfect Customers. And you don't even need to read the book because that's what the book is about. And it says, to attract perfect customers, what do you have to do? What kind of a company do you have to be to get them to recommend you, to give them the ultimate customer experience, for customers to feel comfortable buying from you, buying again, and telling their friends? You have to be absolutely clear about the age, the income, the education, the position, the taste, the history, the background, and the desires of your ideal customer before you begin a business, and especially before you begin advertising. You've got to know who you're advertising at. You can't hit a target that you can't see. Most advertising, they say 50%, 90% of advertising is wasted because the person placing the advertising is unclear about who their exact customers are. Interestingly enough, when one of the major airlines came out with an exclusive frequent flyer program, they picked the very, very best customers for them in the Eastern Seaboard, and they sent out the most targeted advertising you could imagine and got a 40% sign-up rate, where they normally a direct mail effort would get 2%, they got 40%. They blew the doors off the business because they were so effective at identifying their customers and appealing just to them. Which means that advertising, if you paid the amount of advertising to get 2% and you got 40, that means you got 20 times the bang for the buck from the advertising, or your advertising cost 1/20th as much to get the same amount of business. Think about these numbers, they're critical. Here's the second question with regard to your customers. Why does he or she buy? Why does he or she buy? What need or desire does he or she have that causes him or her to buy in the first place? What desire do they want fulfilled? What need do they need? Where does it hurt is the great question we ask in business. Where does it hurt? And how can our product take away the pain, take away the hurt? The third question is, what value, result, or reward does your customer expect when he or she buys from you? What specific value, result, or reward do they expect to get? What is your value offering to your customers? Here's an interesting discovery, University of Chicago, is that people buy in expectation of how they will feel after the sale. If people feel that they'll be happy, satisfied, increased pride, self-esteem, comfort, security, leisure, love, respect, fulfillment, so on, if they feel that they will be better off after the sale, they buy. If they don't have any clear feeling, which is created in the marketing, sales, advertising, then they don't buy. So how are your customers going to feel after they do business with you? If you can identify that and then tell them that this is the result you will get, this is how you will feel, proud, happy, satisfied, in love, romantic, if you buy from us, that is what people buy, not the product or service itself. Perfect example, people who sell travel to tropical destinations, you notice that they always have this long sweep of beautiful beach, beautiful sunshine, blue skies, calm water, and the husband and wife walking lovingly down this empty beach. Now, of course, if you've been there, you know the beach is packed. They probably had to clear it off with police to take the photograph. But that's what people buy, that feeling of romance, of being alone with the most important person in their life, walking on a beach in beautiful weather with lovely water. And people get that picture, and it affects them at an emotional level. That's why they go there, not because they can get a tan or have good, you know, Mai Tais in the bar. Number four is, what do you do better than anyone else? What is your competitive advantage? What makes you superior to any other choice the customer can make? My friend Jay Abraham says that you must use what he calls the strategy of preeminence. It means that you are the only one the customer can buy from. How can you position yourself so, as far as the customer is concerned, you are the only choice? Any other choice would be secondary. So that comes from focusing on conveying to the customer, the right customer, your competitive advantage, the area in which you will serve them in a superior way to anyone else in the market. Here's the fifth question with regard to marketing, advertising, sales, is who or what is your competition? Not only your direct competition, but any other use of the same amount of money or any other way to satisfy the same need. You must be crystal clear about who you are competing against if you're going to compete successfully. I just had a talk with a senior executive of a $5.8 billion company earlier today, and we were talking about this critical factor, is that who you choose to compete against is the critical determinant of your entire marketing strategy. If you choose to go after the biggest company in the industry, where you advertise, how you advertise, what you offer, your prices will all be different. If you decide to go after the guy just one step ahead of you in the industry, you'll have a different strategy. So who is your competitor? Now, your competitor is anyone or anything that the customer can spend their money with. I'll give you an example. When I worked with Carnival Cruise Lines, they told me that their competitor was not other cruise lines, because the cruise line business was expanding steadily. As you know, they're building more and more ships. Their competition was land-based vacations. So they didn't compete or try to compare themselves against Holland America or one of the other lines. They compared themselves against land-based vacations in the same price category. Who or what is your competition? Here's the next question, is why does your customer buy from your competitor? What value does your customer perceive that he receives from your competitor that he does not receive from you? And how could you counteract this? How could you negate it? Well, people say, well, how do we find out why our customers buy from our competitors? I'll tell you how. You go to a customer who you spoke to who bought from a competitor, and you say, you know, I respect your decision very much. Is that company is a good company. Never, never, ever say anything negative about a customer's choice. That's a good company, good people, good products, been in business a long time. But tell me, it would really help me to know why it is you choose them rather than us. What was the deciding point? And your customers will tell you, especially if you phone them, by the way, so there's no danger of confrontation. They say, well, the reason we decided to go with them was this. And I'll tell you this, sometimes you're going to kick yourself because you could have offered them the same thing, but you forgot to mention it. So ask your customers who buy from your competitors why they bought from your competitors. Now, here's the final question, number 7, is what does your customer need to be convinced of to buy from you rather than from someone else? What does your customer need to be convinced of to buy from you? What we have found is that there's what is called single attribute theory in sales and marketing. Is people make their final decision based on a single attribute. There may be lots of little things, but there's one thing that causes the nickel to drop, causes the bell to ring, and you have to find out what it is. Other than that, you can't market and you can't sell appropriately. Find out what will cause the customer to buy. Now, how do you find that out? Well, it's real simple. You ask your customer, Mr. Customer, what is the one thing you have to be convinced of to decide to go with us rather than someone else? And sometimes they'll look up and they'll look around and they'll look down and they'll think and they'll say, well, I'll tell you, it's this. And they'll hand it to you like handing you a rose. And if you can convince them that they will get that, they will buy from you. I've taught this method to more than 1 million salespeople in 42 countries, and it's astonishing how often customers will tell you if you ask them. It's not a big secret. So once you've answered the above questions, ask yourself this. What are the 20% of your activities that could account for 80% of your results? What are the 20% of your sales and marketing activities that could account for 80% of your results? Remember, only a small number of your decisions and actions account for most of your financial results. What are they? By the way, a good decision can make you rich, a poor decision can cost you a fortune, as you know. And in business, you'll make more mistakes than you will do things right. You'll make more small mistakes than you will make good decisions. The key is, as in gambling, is to cut your losses quickly and let your winnings ride. When you do something where you don't know the result, test, and test on a small scale. Be careful. Put a little bit of money into the advertising. If you don't get an immediate result, cut it quickly. If you find something that really works, go all in, as they say in Texas Hold'em, and put a lot of advertising into that area. Now, there are 7 steps to selling more of your product or service in your own business. First is prospecting. This is the process of lead generation, either finding people in the market to see or to phone, or getting them to come to you. Where are your prospects, who are they, and how do you get to them? This is the starting point. By the way, if you can do this well, simply by the law of probabilities, if you can keep your funnel full, keep your pipeline full, whatever you call it, if you can get lots of prospects, you can make a great business. So this is the starting point. This is actually the winner or the loser in business. Number 2 in selling is establishing rapport. Your ability to build trust, credibility, and confidence in your prospective customer is the key to making the sale. I was talking to a senior executive recently, and they were talking about pricing structures and technical processes of account management and so on. I said, no, the most important thing in selling is to establish a high-quality relationship with the customer and maintain it so the customer likes you and trusts you and accepts your advice. Everything else is secondary to that. Relationship selling is the key to the future. Is focus all of your energies on building a relationship with people, build on likability and trust, and everything will take care of itself. Here's the third key to selling, is identifying needs accurately. As we said before, finding out where it hurts. What's the old saying? Is prescription without diagnosis is malpractice? Many salespeople go in and they assume the customer is an ideal candidate for their product or service and begin talking about their product or service right away instead of doing an examination like a doctor and finding out exactly what the customer wants and needs before talking about your product or service. So in identifying needs, this is the process of asking focused, targeted questions to make sure that you fully understand what your customer wants and needs and is willing to pay for. Interesting point. You know, as my friend Stephen Covey says, seek first to understand and then to be understood. And most salespeople, most businesses assume they already know, which is, as you know, a big danger. Now, the fourth key to selling is presenting. And this is where you show, teach, and explain the benefits of what you sell. You focus on what your product does rather than what your product is. And this, by the way, is the turning point in many sales careers. People don't care what your product is. They only care what it does to improve their lives. Your entire focus of all of your selling should be on what your product does to improve or enhance the quality of the customer's life or work. Does, improve, change, alter, bring about, preserve, or reorder some part of the customer's life in a beneficial and cost-effective way. Now, number 5 is answering objections. This is where you answer the normal and natural concerns that prospects have about price and capability. By the way, there are 2 major fears that all prospects have. Number 1 is being taken advantage of, being overcharged, paying too much for the product or service. Number 2 is being hustled, being manipulated, being talked or tricked into buying something that they don't want, don't need, can't use, and can't afford. Your job is to make it clear that you have no intention of rushing them into a sale and that the prices that you offer your product for are good and fair prices in this competitive market. Very important. The 6th part of the selling is closing the sale. You must learn how to ask for the order and tell the prospect exactly what he or she has to do to complete the sale. Interesting thing, in recent research, they say customers want to be taken by the hand and told exactly what actions to take now that you've finished your presentation. Don't leave them sitting there saying, well, what do you want to do now? What you do is you say, well, if you like what I've shown you, the next step is this, and you go on to close the sale, and you take them through it. I will need this from you. You'll have to okay this. I'll have to have the correct spelling of this. We'll need a check from you for this amount. We'll arrange for delivery, and so on. So what you do is you teach the person how to complete the buying process. This is called the directive close, and we talk about it in other places. And finally, the 7th part of effective selling is getting resales to the same customers because they're happy, and referrals, people that they recommend you to. Getting resales and referrals is the acid test of success. Do your customers buy from you again and recommend you to their friends and associates? This is the key to the future. And by the way, if all you did was focus all your efforts on making sure your customers were so happy they bought from you again and brought their friends, you'll be rich. And wonderfully enough, this is a learnable skill. And you can learn it by constantly asking customers for feedback. Would you recommend us? If yes, why? If not, what can we do so you feel comfortable recommending us? This can save you years of hard work. So these are the 7, by the way, and it's really important because these largely determine the success or failure of your sales efforts. It's prospecting, establishing rapport, identifying needs accurately, presenting your product or service, answering objections, closing the sale, and getting resales and referrals. Give yourself a grade of 1 to 10 on each of these and see how you're doing. And measure yourself on that scale, and wherever you're weak, it could be the reason that's costing you sales. In fact, if you're weak enough in any one of these 7 areas, that can actually sabotage your business. Now, there's a law of 3 that we teach in our coaching programs that many of you know about, and it says that there are 3 activities, and only 3 activities in any occupation or job, that account for 90% of your results. In selling, the 3 activities that account for 90% of your sales results are prospecting, presenting, and closing. Now, the other 4 are essential, they're helpful, they're necessary, you have to do them right, but if you don't prospect, present, and close well and consistently and repeatedly, nothing else will work for you. All sales activities are essential, but prospecting, presenting, and closing are the keys. All your sales problems, all your business problems will come from a weakness in one of these 3 areas. I cannot tell you how many salespeople and organizations I worked for that says, we can't get our customers to make a decision. We can't get them to make a decision. And do you know why? It's because you haven't learned how. And all sales skills are learnable. You can learn a variety of ways to help customers make decisions, to overcome the natural hesitation that holds them back. But that's another time, another place. So the good news is that these are all learnable skills. You can become excellent in prospecting, presenting, and closing, and you must commit yourself to excellence in these areas if you want to build a successful, profitable business. Now, this takes us to the marketing mix. There are 7 parts of the marketing mix that you must continually think about and revise in the face of fast-changing market conditions. You must be open to the possibility that whatever your answer to these questions in the marketing mix, the market has changed, and you have to change quickly if you want to live. in the market. So number one, and they call these the seven P's. The first P of the marketing mix is your product or service. What exactly do you sell? What exactly does it do to improve the life or work of your customers? Is this the right product for you and for your market at this time? How can you tell if it's the right product? Well, people are buying it in large quantity and you're making lots of profit. And you're happy with your product or service, you're happy with your customers, and your customers are happy with you. That's how you can tell if your product is appropriate and ideal for this market. The second P, number two, is price. How much do you charge and how do you charge it? Could there be a better way to price and charge for your products? Sometimes you can lower your price and add something else in. Sometimes you can raise your price and add something else. Sometimes you can bundle it. Sometimes you can package it. Sometimes you can upsell and cross-sell. Sometimes you can give discounts. Sometimes you can strip the product down and sell a basic model for much less. There's all kinds of things that you can do to change your pricing, and a small change in your pricing can change your sales by several 100%. And if you make the same amount of profit or even a lower profit on a higher volume, then you're making a good decision. Think about your pricing carefully. The number three P, the third P, is promotion. These are your methods of marketing, advertising, and selling. This is how we get the news to the customers. What revisions do you need to make in your promotional activities to increase the sales of your product or services? Do you have established sales systems? Do you have an established schedule of calls, callbacks, proposals, referrals, reviews, closes, and so on for every single salesperson every single hour of every single day? Do you have specialized methods of marketing that virtually guarantee you an unbroken flow of qualified leads? Well, if you don't, these are things that you can learn. And once you've learned them, you can transform your business. The fourth P is place. Where exactly do you sell and deliver your product? Could there be a better place? Do you sell it out of your own office? Do you sell it out of other people's stores? Do you sell it through distributors? Do you sell it through franchise operators? Do you sell it by the telephone or by the internet? Are there other places that you could sell? By the way, there are something like 24 or 25 well-known and popular places to sell your product or service. Most businesses only use one. They back into one when they start, they get accustomed to the one, and they try to sell more using the one distribution channel. There's 23, 24, 25 others, which, by the way, are described in detail in the book, Getting Rich Your Own Way. Now, the fifth P is packaging. This refers to the external appearance of your product or service, to the way it looks. It's the external appearance of your business. It's the way your people dress and groom, and every visual image that your customers see or experience. Fully 95% of the first impression that you make on your customers will be visual, and the visual appearance can often determine whether you make the sale or not. So you have to look at every single thing your customers see, your brochures, your business cards, your people, your appearance, your dress, your offices, everything else. Let me give you a quick story, really interesting. I had a couple came through my coaching program, had a very busy business selling financial services, investments, insurance, annuities, and so on. And yet they were very good at marketing, getting people to come to their office, but their closing ratio was about 1 in 10. So they had to do a tremendous amount of work and advertising and seminars and so on to get enough people to come to their office to make a living. And I asked them, I said, what does your reception area look like? And she looked at him and glared at him. And he said, well, it's, you know, I said, I guess I'll bet what it is, what it looks like. It's early fishing cabin. You took a bunch of furniture from your garage or your basement when you opened your office, and you stuck it in your waiting room. You've got magazines that are a year old. You've got old floor, old carpet, crummy walls. Well, and they both looked away, they looked down, and she said, I've been telling him for years to spend money on that reception area. I said, what do you think happens when people walk into your place of business and the first thing they see is old and junky? They simply assume that everything you do and everything you sell is of low quality, undependable, unsafe, and turn around and walk out. Well, anyway, 90 days later, they came back to the second session of coaching, and they were both beaming. Because what had happened was they went back and they had agreed they were going to spend $4,000 fixing up their reception area. She went to work on that, put in new wallpaper, new carpets, new furniture, beautiful paintings on the wall, piped in music, fresh flowers every day. Their closing ratio went to 8 out of 10 from 1 out of 10 to 8 out of 10. They had more than doubled their business, and they'd been in business for something like 15 years. They had more than doubled their business in 90 days by one clear change in the visual impact they were making on their customers. And that, by the way, that applies to your people as well. So number 6 is positioning. How are you positioned in your customer's mind? How do they think about you when you're not there? Here's the most important thing of all. What do they say about you when they think about you and talk about you to others? Because what people say and think about you when you're not there is the critical determinant of whether they buy from you, buy again, or bring their friends. It's the critical determinant of whether they recommend you to others. It's also the critical determinant of whether they complain, whether they delay payment on their bills, whether they're difficult to get along with. So here's the rule. Here's the question. What words do you trigger in your customer's mind when your name is brought up? When someone says, oh, the name of your company, John Smith Enterprises, oh, do they have a happy smile? They smile, they think well of you. Are they cheerful? Do they have a happy memory of your last meeting and the consumption of your last product? I mean, that's the key. And you say, all right, what words do I want to leave? Happy, cheerful, comfortable, great service, excellent products, wonderful people, great value. What words do I want to own? And every major company owns certain words, and they've spent millions to own those words. BMW owns the ultimate driving machine. Mercedes-Benz owns quality and excellence. Volvo owns quality and safety. IBM owns great customer service. Nordstrom, customer service. The very best companies are very clear about the words they want to own when their name is mentioned to their customers. What does your name trigger? What do people think about? And what would be helpful for them to think about? If you could readjust all your marketing today and reorganize what you do so you could trigger those exact feelings and words, what words would you want to trigger in your customer's mind? And what would you have to start doing today in order to trigger those minds, those words in that mind somewhere down the line? The last P is people. Who are the key people in your business who deal with customers? Who are your key salespeople? Who are your key service people? The fact is that people do not buy products or services. They buy the people who sell those products or services. They don't buy products or services. They only buy the people. Sometimes one change in your key people can change your entire business, especially your key people who deal with your most important customers. I've worked with companies that have made one change. They've put all of their people in uniforms when they called on their customers. Neat, smart clothes, nice jackets, nice shirts, nice pants, and increased their business 500%. Because the impression they left in their mind is this is a really nice professional company. High quality people must mean high quality products and services. Then, of course, they backed it up. Okay, moving along. Those are the 7 P's. Number 1 is your product. Number 2 is your price. Number 3 is your promotion. Number 4 is your place. Number 5 is your packaging. Number 6 is your positioning. Number 7 is the people. Go through and think about those. A change in any one of those can transform your business for the better. Now, moving right along. One of the most important business skills you will ever learn is called zero-based thinking. In zero-based thinking, you continually ask this question. If I were not now doing what I am doing, knowing what I now know, would I get into it again today? Is there any part of your business, your product, price, promotion, place, packaging, positioning, or people that knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start up again today if you had to do it over? Is there anyone that you wouldn't hire, assign, or promote? Is there any method of expenditure you wouldn't get into, advertising, process, procedure in your business? Is there anything in your business that knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start up again? It takes tremendous courage to admit that you have made a mistake or that you may be doing the wrong thing based on the current market. But facts are facts. As Ayn Rand said, reality is. You can't avoid it. If you would not get into it again today, your only question is, how do I get out of this? And how fast. Have the courage to cut your losses. Have the courage to draw a line under the past and make new decisions based on new information. The only measure of any business activity is this. Is it working? Are you getting results? Are you generating sales, revenues, and positive cash flow? If you're not, be prepared to change or even abandon the product, service, or activity. In your business, there are only two types of activities. In any business, for that matter, revenue and expense. You should only invest money in your business to increase revenues, to increase sales, to increase positive cash flow. You don't spend a lot of money in your business on desks and furniture and things that don't contribute sales. Some of the richest people in America started off with a door on two sawhorses as their desk and a cheap telephone and a pencil and paper, and they started off from there. They did not spend a penny on their premises until they were way, way ahead of profitability. Now, there are only four ways to move you faster down the road to wealth in your own business. Here they are. Number one, you can do more of certain things. What you do more of? You do more of the things that are working. Number two, you can do less of other things. What do you do less of? You do less of the things that aren't working. Number three, you can start up something brand new, a new product, a new service, a new method of sales, marketing, or distribution, something you've never done before. And this, by the way, is where the great breakthroughs take place. And number four, you can stop certain activities altogether. So always ask yourself, what should I do more of or less of? Start or stop? More, less, start or stop? These are the four big questions on the road to wealth. On the road to wealth, you have three key concerns. First, apply the 80-20 rule to all of your activities, customers, prospects, methods of sales and advertising, all of your services, your cash flow, and people. Remember always that 20% of your activities will account for 80% of your results. That's where you must focus and concentrate. Second is profitability. Examine every activity of your business to determine the most profitable things you sell or do. What is number one? What is the second most profitable? What is the third most profitable product or service? You must know with unerring accuracy where your best profits are coming from so that you can do more of those things. And third, efficiency. Keep asking yourself, if I could only do one thing all day long, what one activity would it be? If you could only do one activity all day long, which one activity would have the greatest impact on your sales, revenues, and cash flow? Whatever your answer to that question, focus more and more on that activity every single day. Now, your key to success on the road to wealth is always one thing, and it's very simple. It's to add value. All success in life and in every area comes from adding value in some way. If you're not adding value, it's not a safe way to make money. The more value you add, the more you will be able to capture some of that value for yourself in the form of commissions, profits, and ultimately, business success. You add value by finding a product or service that people want and need, and then by offering that product or service in a quality and quantity that people are willing to pay for. You sell it effectively, deliver it efficiently, and service your customers in an excellent way. The way to wealth is and always has been your ability to start and build a successful business. Fortunately, if you can drive a car, you can learn how to be a successful entrepreneur. You can start a business and put yourself on the road to wealth for the rest of your life. And I hope you do. Thank you for listening. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined, continuous learner. So, find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.